Apparently it's a pretty successful organism all around the planet, because all of this that's come down has some in it. It was a very dry climate before this, so there probably wasn't much opportunity for exposure. But with the rain and the flood, pretty much everyone's come in contact. And it's salt tolerant. The chemical deck chimed, and Elvie moved toward it automatically, her eyes still on Holden. But Faez, Lucia, and one of the other squatters were already lifting out the sack of clean water and fitting a new bag in place.
"Is that a problem?" Holden said. "How does salt figure into it?"
"We're salty," Elvie said, and was immediately uncomfortable with her phrasing. Her hands seemed too large and awkward in a way they usually weren't. "What I mean is, we've seen infections with this organism before. It does well in tears and tear ducts, and then eyes."
"Eyes," Holden said.
"Lucia saw one case before the storm. Once the organism got into the vitreous humor, it's in a novel environment that seems to suit it really well, and exponential growth's pretty normal in those conditions. So that winds up blocking the light from hitting the retina, and..." Holden held up his hands, palm out. She found herself moving in toward him, ready to put her palms against his. She stopped herself.
"I thought the things that lived here had a whole different biology. How can they infect us?"
"It's not an infection like a virus," she said. "It's not hijacking our cells or anything. We're just a new, nutrient-rich environment, and this little guy found a way to exploit it. It's not trying to make us blind. It's just that the extracellular matrix is a really easy path into the eyeball for it, and it's really happy when it gets there. Explosive growth is something you see in any kind of invasive species coming into a new environment. No competition." Holden ran a hand through his hair. When he spoke, his voice was soft, like he was speaking mostly to himself. "Apocalyptic explosions, dead reactors, terrorists, mass murder, death slugs, and now a blindness plague. This is a terrible planet. We should not have come here." "I'm sorry," she said, putting her hand on his arm. He had a very solid arm, muscular. He put his own hand over hers, and her heart picked up a little. She hated feeling like a schoolgirl with her first crush, but she also thrilled to it. "Just stay focused," she thought. "A little dignity."
"Okay, Dr. Okoye."
"Elvie."
"Elvie, I need you and Dr. Merton to do whatever you have to do to take care of this. I think I've found a way to get supplies down from orbit, but I don't see any way to get anyone up the well, or where to put them if we did. So, if I'm right, I can get you whatever supplies we have up there. But I need you to fix this."
"I will," Elvie said, nodding. She didn't have any idea how she could keep that promise, but her heart was full to bursting with the determination that she would.
"Anything you need," Holden said. "You just tell me." Elvie had a sudden, intrusive, and surprisingly graphic thought. She felt a blush crawling up her neck.
"All right, Captain," she said. If I could get a spare sampling bag from the Israel, I think it would really help."
He let go of her, and she regretted the absence immediately. She shoved her hands into her pockets. He nodded to her, hesitated for a moment as if he were waiting for her to say something more, then moved away into the crowded main room. Elvie bit her lip and swallowed a couple of times until the thickness in her throat subsided. She knew she was being silly, and even borderline inappropriate, but the knowledge did nothing to change it. She stopped at the window, looking out at the gray rain. It was hard to believe that every drop of it contained something that would colonize her body the way that humanity had New Terra. It looked peaceful out there, vast and rich and beautiful. Even the slow river of floodwater carried the calming, majestic, beautiful sense of nature playing out. Most of Earth was covered in cities or managed nature preserves about as untamed as a service dog. Mars and the Belt were studded with colonies that had been built and designed to carve a human place in inhuman and lifeless circumstances. This, she realized, was the first place she'd been in her life where she could see true wilderness, the way it had been for millennia on Earth. Red in tooth and claw, deadly and uncaring, vast, unpredictable, and complex as anything she could imagine. "You all right?" Lucia asked. "Overwhelmed," Elvie said. "Fine." "I've harvested a new sample run from the water purifier," the doctor said. "Help me with the assaying?" "Of course," Elvie said. "When the sampling bag comes, it'll be easier to send the data back home. Maybe they'll be able to help." "Well, if they find anything, make sure they send it in an audio file," Lucia said. "I don't know that we're going to be reading much." "How are we going to do it?" Elvie asked.
"Do what?"
"Do any of it. Eat, rebuild, make clean water, keep the death slugs out. How are we going to do any of that when none of us can see what we're doing?"
"At a guess," Lucia said.
"Poorly." The long New Terran day and the darkness of the clouds made time feel strange. Elvie sat hunched in the little side chamber that Fires had appropriated for their research lab. The walls were curved in ways that left her thinking of bones. The only opening was high on the wall, and Fires or Lucia or Sudyam had put a sheet of clear plastic over it to keep the death slugs out. A bank of white LEDs splashed a cold light across the deep red wall and ceiling. A small green sludge in her makeshift petri dish could have been algae or fungus or the remains of a salad left weeks too long in the back of her dormitory refrigerator back in Upper University. But it wasn't any of those things. And the more she looked at it, the more aware she was of the fact. There were some similarities to the more familiar kingdoms of life she'd studied before. Lipid boundaries around cells, for instance, appeared to be a good move in design space, just the way eyes were, or flight. They seemed to do something similar to mitotic division, though sometimes the cells divided in threes instead of pairs, and she didn't know why. There were other anomalies, too. Concentrations of some photoactivated molecules that didn't quite make sense. And what was worse, she couldn't think about it. Couldn't concentrate. Whenever her focus slipped, it slipped onto James Holden. The sound of his voice, his despairing and undaunted laughter, the shape of his ass. He haunted her. She realized that she'd gone through 4 pages of chemical assay data without having any idea what she'd seen, sat back on her heels and cursed. "Problem?" Fayez said, stepping through the doorway. His hair was tied back, his face gray with fatigue and streaked with old mud. She wondered, looking at him, how long it had been since he'd slept. She wondered how long it had been since she'd slept, or eaten, for that matter. "Yes," she said. He squatted down beside the arch that led back toward the main rooms. The plastic was dark. It was nighttime then. She hadn't been paying attention. "What's the rumpus?" Fayez asked. "Is there some new, oh my god, we're going to die, or are we still coming to appreciate fully the list we've already got?"
"I have to find Captain Holden."
Fayez put his head in his hands.
"Of course you do."
"I have to clear the air." Fayez's neck stiffened, and his eyes were wide.
"No, Elvie, no you don't."
"I do," she said. "I know it's inappropriate, but the fact of the matter is that I'm in love with him. It's a distraction, and it's affecting my work. I've tried ignoring it, and it's not helping. So I'll go to him, and we'll talk it through. Just to resolve it, and..."
"No, no, no," Fayez said. "Oh no, that's a terrible, terrible idea. Don't do that."
"You don't understand. I don't want to, but I have to be able to concentrate. And my feelings about him..."
She rose.
Now that she'd said it, it was obvious what had to happen. He'd been sleeping in one of the side rooms like this. Amos would probably be there too as a guard. She could just ask to see him there in private, and she could unburden herself. She hadn't understood that term before, but she did now. She could unburden herself to him, and he was so kind and so gentle and so thoughtful, he wouldn't laugh at her or turn her away. She would... "Elvie," Faya said again, "please, please, please do not do this. You aren't in love with James Holden. You don't know James Holden from Adam. You have no idea how close his persona is to the real man, and you've never met the real man. He's on the news feeds, and he works here, that's all." "You don't understand." "Of course I do," Faya said. "You're scared as hell, you're lonely, and you're horny. Elvie, listen to me. You've been in one of the most stressful environments possible for the last 2 years. First, we were coming to an unknown planet. Then it was an unknown planet with a bunch of people on it who tried to kill you. And then it blew up. And now we're trying to fend off tiny little things that can kill you because you brush up against them while you try to figure out how to keep things from growing in our eyes. No one stays sane in a situation like this." "Faez, no! Hear me out. You always cope by ignoring how scared you are and focusing on work, and that's great. Really, whatever gets you through the night, I am absolutely for it. But you're a mammal, Elvie. You're a social animal that derives reassurance from touch. And since we're not a cuddle-puddle culture, that means sex. For 2 years, you've been avoiding workplace romances while all the rest of us have been pairing off and changing partners because we were lonely and scared, and that's one way primates reassure themselves and each other. Everyone's been doing this but you. I don't... So, here you are, freaked out so badly you aren't even clear that you're freaked out. And here comes James Holden, savior of the universe, and of course it all comes out sideways. But it's not about him. It's about you. And if you go clear the air with him, either you'll wind up in bed together, or you'll be back here weeping into your tissue samples." Elvie felt her jaw sliding forward, her hands forming fists. Faez rose to his knees, but not more than that. He reached out an arm to block the archway, grimaced and pulled it back. When he spoke again, Faez's voice was softer, gentler. "Please. We have fucked up everything about coming to this death trap of a planet. We have hauled every tribalist, territorial, monkey-brained mistake humanity ever made through the gate and made soup with them here. This thing you're about to do? Please let this be the one mistake we don't make." "You're telling me," Elvie said, her voice equal parts outrage and ice, "that I just need to get laid?" Faez slumped back against the wall, defeated. "I'm saying you're human, and humans take comfort from each other. I'm saying you don't want Holden for the person he is because you don't know him, and you're making up a story about him so that you feel okay about taking the thing you need, because God forbid you should have a need that isn't all twined up with romantic love." And he lifted his hands, shook his head and looked away. The rain pattered against the sheet plastic, tapping like fingernails on stone. Someone far down the hall shouted, and a voice even more distant called back. Elvie crossed her arms. "And?" she said. "Go on. I don't see why you should stop now." "And," Faez sighed, "and I'm right here." It took a moment for her to understand what he was saying, what he was offering. Her laughter was as unstoppable as the storm had been. He pursed his lips and shrugged, his gaze fixed on the wall behind her. She couldn't stop grinning, even though the force of it made her cheeks hurt. And then the hilarity faded a bit. She caught her breath. A flash of distant lightning brightened the window, but no thunder followed it. She looked down at Faez. After a moment, he looked up. "Okay," she said. Faez snored when he slept. Not deeply, not a buzzsaw, just a soft purring at the back of his throat. Their mud-caked clothes were folded into pillows under their heads. She lay on her back, her knees bent, considering the ceiling and the softness of her own flesh. He was on his side, curled against her for warmth, his legs folded under and around hers. His breath tickled the skin of her collarbone. She wondered what she would do or say if someone walked through the archway. But it was night, and the nights here were very long. There was room in them. She considered his body, the color of raw honey, with more hair on his chest and legs than she'd expected. Like a caveman, only without any Neanderthal brow ridge. She took a deep breath and let it out slowly, just to see how it felt. She'd always made a rule of not sleeping with her co-workers. She hadn't so much as held someone's hand since the Israel had started its long burn for the gate. She'd almost forgotten what sex felt like, and its aftermath. Fayez coughed, shifted, and she took the chance to draw herself away from him. He sprawled on the floor, face pressed against her clothes, eyes shut. She thought about James Holden, her mind touching gently at her heart, half afraid of what it would find. "Huh," she said to the room, softly so as to keep Fayez from waking. "I wasn't in love with Holden." Fayez's breath shifted and his eyes fluttered but didn't open. She thought about trying to get her jumpsuit from him, but he looked so peaceful she decided to wait. She had expected to feel embarrassed by her nakedness, ashamed. She didn't. She sat cross-legged by the chemical assays. In the dish, the green smear from the water sample had shifted a little, throwing off hair-thin runners, exploring its environment. She pulled up the chemical information and started going through it again from the start. When she came to the strange reading of light-activated compounds, she coughed out an impatient sigh. They were chiral, and this was a bichiral environment. She was seeing both conformations, and probably for completely different functions. That made sense then. She stretched, her spine popping between the shoulder blades, and folded herself forward, her eyes skimming through the data. She took notes of questions to ask Lucia or send back home. She fell into the data, not noticing when Fayez woke, dressed, and left until he draped a blanket over her shoulders. She looked up. Her jumpsuit was still in a pile on the floor. Fayez put a cup of hot tea beside her and kissed the top of her head. "Good morning, sunshine," he said. Elvie smiled, leaning back against his shins. "I bet you say that to all the girls." "You okay?" he asked gently. Elvie frowned. Was she? Given the circumstances, maybe so. "I'm looking at this organism," she said, "and, you know, I think I'm beginning to understand it. Here, take a look at these numbers." Chapter 36. Havelock. The air recycling systems on the Edward Israel didn't care where their power came from. Fusion reactor or battery power, it was all the same to them. Havelock sensed that the air had changed, grown hotter and thicker and less able to sustain life, was all in his head. He was aware of being in a steel and ceramic tube of air, closed off from any larger sustaining environment. He'd spent most of his adult life in that situation, and the fact had become as invisible to him as someone on Earth thinking about being held to a spinning celestial object by nothing more than mass, shielded from the fusion reaction of the sun by only distance and air. It wasn't something you thought about until it was a problem. His monitor was split between Captain Marwick on the left, looking harried and cross, and the chief of RCE's engineering team, and Havelock's own militia on the right. "I can up the efficiency of the grid enough to get us 2, maybe 3 days," the chief engineer said. His face was flushed and his jaw jutted forward. In theory, Marwick said, this is an old ship. Things based on theory don't always play out well here. We know what kind of grid this is, Kunin said. It's not guesswork. We have the numbers. It's hard facing the fact that numbers are a kind of guesswork, isn't it? Marwick said. Gentlemen, Havelock said, his voice taking the same intonation Mertries would have had. I understand the issue. She may be dead, but she's still my ship, Marwick said. Dead? The chief engineer said. We're going to be dead if... Stop now, Havelock said. Both of you. Just stop. I understand the issue, and I appreciate both of your views. We're not going to do a goddamn thing with any ship modifications until we've loaded the next supply drop for the folks downstairs. Captain, can I have permission for the engineering team to do a sight-only inspection of the grid lines and couplings? Sight-only, Marwick said, eyes narrowed. If you'll commit to that, fine line between seeing something and wanting to give it a little pet. Havelock nodded as if that had been permission. Chief, put together a crew. Visual inspection only. Give me a report once the drop's gone. Sir, the chief engineer said. The word was crisp and a little too loud. The way someone who wasn't in the military thought people in the military sounded. The connection on the right dropped, and Captain Marwick resized automatically to fill the screen. That man's an asshole. He's scared, and he's trying to exercise control over, well, anything he can actually exercise control over. He's an asshole, and he's forgotten that a few paintball games aren't enough to make him Admiral fucking Nelson. I'll keep him in line, Havelock said. For another 10 days, and then it won't matter. Marwick nodded once and dropped his connection as well. Havelock took a deep breath and let it out slowly through his nose. He flipped back to his connection request queue. Another 30 messages had come in just while he'd been talking to the captain and the chief. They were all messages from home. From Seoul. Requests for interviews and comment from people he'd never met, but not all from people he hadn't seen. Sergio Morales from Nizavisle News. Amanda Farouk from First Response. Mayon Dale from Central Information OPA. Even Nasser Maxwell from Forecast Analytics. The faces and personalities of all the news feeds he followed to stay in touch with how things were going back at home were coming to him now. Humanity's attention was pointed out to New Terra. To him. He didn't like it, and it didn't help. He went through them one by one, replying with the same canned recording he'd made the first time. Our hands are full right now addressing the situation on New Terra. Please refer your questions to Patricia Verpisky Sloan with Royal Charter Energy's Public Relations Division. Blah, blah, blah. He'd probably be dressed down at some point for doing that much. He was already a little worried that he shouldn't have said his hands were full. You all right? Naomi asked from her cell. I'm fine. I just ask because you're sighing a lot. Am I? 5 times in the last minute, Naomi said. Before the reactor died, it was 1 every 2 minutes. On average. Havelock smiled. You need a hobby. Oh, I really do. Naomi said. He pulled up the drop shipment status page. The insertion point was still 8 hours away. The longest fabrication run he could do was about 6 hours then. If Mertry and the others needed anything that took longer than that, they'd have to wait. He started cycling through the list. Food, spare water bags for the chem deck they'd salvaged, acetylene and oxygen for the salvage and repair crew. He checked the weight. He didn't want to skip anything that might be useful downstairs, but it wouldn't help anyone to scatter it all across the upper atmosphere because a chute failed. You're going to be famous when we get back, Naomi said. Hmm? You're the face of it now. Everything that's happening here? That message you made is what all the feeds are going to be playing. That message was so information-free, it was almost sterile, Havelock said. That's how you say no comment without sounding like you're trying to hide something. They won't care. Maybe they don't even run your words. Just the image of you with the audio turned low while they talk over it. Well, that's just great, Havelock said, sifting the drop contents. The emergency lighting had batteries, and while they probably wouldn't be enough to set off the planetary defenses, he didn't want to risk it. He tried to remember if there was anything else that carried its own energy supply. It wasn't an issue he was used to worrying about. It was like that for us, Naomi said. Well, for him, really. Even before Eros. What was? Being the face of something. Looking back, I can see where it happened. And then he was that guy who'd been shot at by Mars, and then Eros. True enough, Havelock said. There are probably people who haven't heard of James Holden and the Rosinante, but they're not the kind of people who watch news feeds. He seems to bear up under it pretty well, though. Why, Mr. Havelock, I do believe that was sarcasm. He switched to the packing schematic. The computer had taken all the packages and lined them up in 6 different configurations, depending on whether density, aerodynamics, or even weight distribution was the highest priority. He turned the images with his fingers, imagining each of them in turn falling through the buffeting, violent high atmosphere of New Terra. I just mean that it doesn't seem to bother him, he said. Honestly, he's barely aware of it, Naomi said. Come on. You're telling me he doesn't get off on it? Just a little? He doesn't get off on it, even a little, Naomi said. I've known men that would, but that's not Jim. You two are a couple, right? Yes. Well, I'd call him a lucky man, except he's involved with this utter clusterfuck of a planet, Havelock said as he chose one of the compromise packing schemes. The only thing I'm going to be the face of is a long, slow death that everyone in the system can watch and be glad they aren't here. He switched to the fulfillment tree view. The remaining jobs that needed to be fabbed were all in queue. He had the feeling he was missing something, but it took a few seconds to remember what. He switched back to the inventory and added in a little box of Oncocytals for James Holden. How well did you know Miller? Naomi asked. Were you close? We were partners, Havelock said. He kept me out of trouble a couple of times when I was in over my head, or when I was being stupid. Ceres, right before the OPA took over, wasn't a good place for an Earther. Did he ever strike you as, I don't know, weird? He was a cop on Ceres, Havelock said. We were all weird. Are you about ready for your big outing? Naomi laced her fingers through the grate of the cell. Her expression was amused. That time of the day already, is it? It is the priority of Royal Charter Energy to see that prisoners in its care are treated humanely in accordance with corporate policy and interplanetary law, he said, the same way he did every time. It had become something like a joke between them. Funny, not because it was funny, but because it was familiar. Does seem kind of pointless, Naomi said. I mean, if we're all going to die. I know, Havelock said, surprised at the tightness in his chest. But it's what we've got, so I'll take it. He unstrapped himself and floated over to the restraints locker, punching in his code. The locker dispensed an anklet, and he tossed it across the space. Naomi caught it with her fingertips and drew it gently through. She fixed it around her left ankle and fed the two ends together. The anklet hissed, and the diagnostic light went green. Havelock checked his hand terminal. The anklet read as ready. No anomalies, no errors. He opened the cell and Naomi floated out, stretching. Her paper jumpsuit crackled with every motion. Shall we? Havelock asked. I've been looking forward to it all day, Naomi said. The gymnasium was fuller than usual. The uncertainty, the fear, drove some people toward exercise. Havelock didn't know if it was the sense of action that brought them, or the need for exhaustion, the drive to wear themselves down so far despite the fact that they were flying dead over an empty planet and the nearest help was over a year away. Or maybe it was just a way to self-medicate. Endorphins could be wonderful things. He escorted Naomi to a resistance gel box, then took the weight trainer next to her. The crew at the other machines pretended not to watch them. Most of their expressions were the careful blank of poker faces, but a few were angry. Of the angry people, most were focused on her, but a few, belters mostly, shot accusing glances at him. Havelock pretended to ignore them as he worked the major muscle groups in his back and legs. Any fast movements and he'd have his weapon drawn, though. Keeping her alive and himself whole was the job. That and trying to hold everyone together until the ship burned up. Sweat adhered to his skin. Tiny dots spreading, touching, pooling. If he worked long enough, he could wind up in a cocoon of his own sweat. He stopped between sets to wick his face dry, and then also Naomi's. She nodded her thanks but didn't speak. When they were done, he opened the gel box and let her out. One of the environmental techs, a belter with pale hair and a pug nose named Orson Koch, floated over to claim it next.
"To Kerikaba a Axel's fist," he said, and Naomi laughed.
"Shikataga fucking nai, Sasa," she said.
"Come on," Havelock said. "Let's get moving." The belter technician put himself in the gel, and Naomi launched across the room back toward the hall that led to his office and her cell. Havelock looked over his shoulder the whole way back. He didn't feel comfortable until she was back in her cell with the grate closed and locked. He pulled a fresh uniform and some wipes from the locker and fed them through to her before he turned on the privacy shield. He pulled himself back to his crash couch, listening to the soft sounds as she stripped off her old uniform, bathed, and put on the fresh. She was right. The privacy shields on the cells didn't stop sound for shit. He checked his queue. 57 more requests for comment, and none of them anyone he wanted to speak with. He sent them the canned answer again. He closed his eyes, trying to judge by how comfortable it was to keep them closed whether he'd be able to sleep. He thought so now, but ever since the reactors had shut down, it was easier to fantasize about resting than to rest. His monitor chirped. Murtry was on the line. He accepted the connection. The man on the screen was the one Havelock knew, and he wasn't. Murtry's face had never had much padding to it, but he looked gaunt now. The steely focus Havelock was used to seeing wasn't there, and it took a few seconds to realize it was because Murtry wasn't making the effort to see him.
"You there, Havelock?"
"Yes, sir. How's it going down there, sir?"
"It could be better," Murtry said. "I need a status update on the drop."
"Oh, it's progressing well. We should have it packed and ready for drop in, looks like 6 hours and change."
"All right.
Are you not getting the security group alerts, sir? Should I run diagnostics on them?"
"I'm getting them, but I can't read them," Murtry said.
His tone was as calm and conversational as if he hadn't just admitted he was losing his sight.
"So once this drop is done, I want a new priority for the next drop."
"Of course.
We need to construct a semi-permanent shelter down here. Simple enough design that we can put it together even if we can't see what we're doing all that well. Sturdy enough to last, well, shit, 2 to 4 years, I suppose. See what you can find in the specs. If there's nothing on board that fits the bill, you can query the databases back home, but I'd rather not miss too many drop windows. I'm not sure how much longer the people down here are going to be up for working."
"What dimensions do you need?"
"Doesn't matter. Whatever's fast and sturdy."
Havelock frowned. The sounds from the prisoner's cell were gone. He didn't know if she was listening. Probably she was. He couldn't see how it mattered.
Is there anything functional I should be looking for?
Murtry shook his head. His gaze caught the camera for a moment, then let it go.
If this expedition doesn't leave survivors, I want to make damn sure that when the next wave shows up, there's something with a roof on it waiting for them, and that it has RCE printed on it.
Planning a flag, sir?
I think of it as a minimum fallback position, Murtry said.
Can you do it?
I can.
Good man. I'll be in touch.
Is there anything else you need down there?
Nah, Murtry said.
Plenty of things I'd want, but get me that shelter fast enough, we can put it up, and we'll have what we need.
The connection went dead. Havelock whistled low between his teeth. The privacy shield in Naomi's cell dropped.
Hey, he said. Your boss's plan is to build a shed strong enough to be a headstone when the next group of idiots comes out here to die. I can't decide if that man's a nihilist or the second most idealistic man I've ever met.
Might be room for both.
Might be, Naomi said. And then a moment later, are you all right?
Me? I'm fine.
Are you sure?
Because you're in a ship in decaying orbit, and the man you look up to like a father just told you was getting ready to die.
I don't look up to him like a father, Havelock said.
All right.
He has a plan. I'm sure he has a plan.
His plan is that we all die, Naomi said. In Null G, tears didn't fall so much as build up, sheeting over his eyes until everything looked like he was underwater. Drowned. He wiped them away with his sleeve, but there was still too much moisture running across his lenses, tiny waves that shook the walls. It took almost a minute to bring his breath back under control.
Well, that must have been amusing for you, he said bitterly.
No, she said. But if you've got a spare tissue, I'd take it. This uniform doesn't absorb for crap. When he looked over, she also had a sheen of tears filling her eye sockets. Havelock hesitated, then unstrapped himself, grabbed the tiny, hard puck of a hand towel and slid over to her. He passed the puck through the grating, and she pressed it to her eyes, letting the water from them darken the cloth, and letting it expand and unfold on its own.
I'm scared as hell, Havelock said.
Me too.
I don't want to die.
I don't either.
Murtry doesn't care.
No, Naomi said.
He doesn't.
Words rose in his throat, clogging it. For a moment, he thought he might start weeping again. He was too tired. He'd been working too long under too much stress. He was getting emotionally labile, maudlin. The knot in his throat didn't fade.
I think, he said, struggling with each syllable, that I took the wrong contract.
No better next time, she said.
Next time.
She put her fingers through the grate, and he pinched her fingertip gently between his thumb and forefinger. For a long moment they floated there together. Prisoner and guard, belter and earther, corporate employee and government saboteur. None of it seemed to matter as much as it used to. Chapter 37. Elvie. The data and analysis came back in a disorganized lump, some from the expert systems on the Israel, some from the RCE work groups back on Luna, Earth, and Ganymede. There was no synthesis, no easily digested summary of the findings. Instead, it was opinion and speculation, suggested tests, only some of which were remotely possible with the equipment she had, and data analysis. Between Lucia's medical reports of the early cases among the squatters and Elvie's observations from after the deluge, there was just enough information to fuel 1,000 theories and not enough to draw any real conclusions. And Elvie was the head of the local work group, and the only person in the universe with access to test subjects and new information. The death slugs were relatively simple. The toxic compound was a complex carbon ring with a nitrogenous sheet coming off it that looked superficially related to tetrodotoxin and appeared to be part of the slug's motility system rather than an anti-predation adaptation. How exactly it crossed into the blood was still mysterious, but the slime had a half-dozen R-chiral elements that no one had yet bothered to examine extensively. Whatever new knowledge arose from later study, for Elvie's purposes, the answers were all there. Neurotoxin, no antidote, try not to touch them, done. The eye flora, on the other hand, was more complex. The labs on Luna and Ganymede were working with algal models, treating the growth as if it were an invasive species that had entered a naive tide pool. The Earthwork group was arguing that the better model was actually a photosensitive mineral structure. Working from what little medical data had survived the storm, the Israel's expert system suggested that the blindness was less from the foreign mass in the vitreous humor and more from the way that the living organism scattered light. That was very good news, because it suggested that killing the organism and breaking down the optically active structures would lead to a fairly rapid return of function. There would be floaters in all their eyes, but most people had those, and the brain was decent at compensating for them. How to go about killing them, though, was obscure, and time was at a premium. There was a decided spike in white blood cells, so their bodies were trying to clean the invaders out. It just wasn't working. For her, the symptoms had started with just a little scratchiness around her eyelids, no worse than seasonal allergies back at home. Then there was a little whitish discharge and a mild headache. And then, 7 hours after she first noticed it, the world began to blur a little and take on a greenish hue. That was when she knew for certain that she was going to be blinded by it too. Fear and practicality were changing the shape of the refugee camp, even within the physical constraints of the ruins. People who had gone to the farther parts of the structure were pulling back in now. The need for space and privacy was giving way to the fear of the slugs and the weather and the dread of their growing impairment. The increased density mostly showed itself to Elvie as a change in the ambient sound. Louder voices in conversation that ran together until she felt like she was doing research in the back of a train station. Sometimes it was comforting to have all those human sounds around her. Sometimes it was annoying. For the most part, she ignored it. "Are you doing all right, doctor?" Elvie turned from the chemistry deck. Carol Chiwiwi stood in the arch that passed for a doorway. She looked tired, and blurry, and vaguely green. Elvie rubbed her eyes to clear them, even though she knew intellectually it wouldn't make any difference. Rain pattered softly against the plastic sheeting. Elvie almost didn't notice it anymore. "Fine," she said. "You have the new count?"
"We caught 41 of the little fuckers today," Carol said. "That's an uptick, isn't it? I thought if things dried out a little, they'd start going away."
"Is it drying out?"
"No. It's raining less, though. I hoped."
"Too early to call it significant," Elvie said, entering the data in its field. Tracking the number of death slugs was just one more of a dozen studies she was juggling now. "The overall trend is still down, and there may be a cycle within the next few days."
"It would be good if they slept at night. Probably too much to hope for, though."
"Probably," Elvie said. "They're normally subterranean. They're not likely to be diurnal."
"We're running out of food," Carol said.
Her voice didn't change its inflections.
"The drops are helping," Elvie said.
"The drops won't last forever. There has to be something on this planet we can eat."
"There isn't," Elvie said.
Carol said something obscene under her breath, and it sounded like despair. She sighed.
"All right. See you again next hour."
"Thank you."
Behind her, Faez yawned and stretched. She'd meant to nap with him, but she hadn't quite gotten away from the deck. She squinted, checking the time. Faez had been asleep for 3 hours.
"Did I miss anything?" he asked.
"Science," she said. "You missed science."
"Well, damn. Can I borrow your notes?"
"Nope, you'll just have to hire a tutor." He chuckled.
"Did you remember to eat?"
"No."
"At last, a way I can be useful. Stay here and I'll come back with a bar of undifferentiated food-like product and some filtered water."
"We're running out of food."
"Thank you,"
she said. "And while you're out there, see if you can find Ima and Lucia. They were going to be doing ocular assessments of everyone."
"The blind studying the blind," Faez said. "It's like graduate school all over again. I'll track them down. You should take a break. Rest your eyes."
"I will," Elvie lied. Her eyes, all their eyes, would soon be getting plenty of rest. Growing up, Elvie's aunt had been blind and still perfectly functional, but she'd been living in a farming arcology in Trento. Elvie was on a planet with no sustainable agriculture, an inedible ecosystem, and where touching the wrong thing would kill her on the spot. Context was everything. Her hand terminal chimed. A new batch of reports and letters from the Ganymede group. She opened them with a sigh. If she took time to read all the suggestions they were coming up with, she wouldn't have time for anything else. She picked one at random and opened it. She had to increase the font to read it, but switching to bright red lettering on a black background helped a little. If the invading organism followed the same growth curve as yeast...
"Success," Faez said. "I have returned with sustenance and Lucia. And you aren't even pretending to have taken a break."
"Nope," Elvie said, taking the hard, palm-sized cake of emergency rations from him and turning to the doctor.
"What have we found?"
"Good news and bad. Almost 100% infection rate," Lucia said, sinking to the floor beside her. "The progression is slower in children than adults, it seems, but only slightly."
"What about RCE versus First Landers?"
"I haven't seen all the data Ima collected. She was working with your people, mostly. My impression is that there's no difference. Also, in the bad news column, it appears to be much more aggressive than the earlier, isolated cases." Elvie took a bite of the bar. It tasted like unsweetened fruitcake and smelled like potting soil and sucked up all the saliva in her mouth like a sponge.
"Higher initial load?"
Elvie said around the puck of food in her mouth.
"It was so arid before. There might not have been as many infectious particles."
"Few enough that our immune systems could identify them as foreign and kick them out," Lucia said.
"Can they do that?"
Faez asked. "I thought these things were a completely different biology.
Do our immune systems even work on them?"
"Not as efficiently," Lucia said. She sounded tired. "But if the storm was loaded with them, they'd swamp what defenses we do have."
"And then," Elvie said, "everyone gets it."
"Yes," Lucia said. "Only no." Elvie opened her eyes again. Lucia was smiling. "Good and bad, remember? We have one man with no growth."
"None?"
"Even if it were only massively delayed growth, I know what the early signs should look like. Nothing."
Could he not have been exposed?"
"He was exposed." Elvie felt a bubble of pure joy open in her chest. It was like getting an unexpected present. A flash of lightning brightened the room for a moment, and she wondered why it was green until she remembered.
"So we've got the one-eyed man who's going to be king," Faez said.
"I mean, better one than none, but I'm not seeing the long-term solve here."
"We've found treatments and vaccines for any number of diseases by studying people who are naturally immune," Elvie said. "This is a toehold."
"Right,"
Fayez said, rubbing his eyes. I'm sorry, I may not be at my best right now. I've been under a little stress lately.
Elvie smiled at the little joke.
Will he consent to testing? She asked.
Do we care?
Fayez said.
I haven't had the chance to ask yet, Lucia said. It was hard enough getting the initial screening done.
Why? Elvie asked. Who is it?
Holden was at the entrance to the main room. Whatever hues his clothes had been, they were the color of mud now. Same as for everyone else. Mud, exhaustion, tears, and fear were the new uniform for the RCE and the citizens of First Landing alike. His hair was slicked back and greasy. The beginnings of a spotty, moth-eaten beard mottled his cheeks and the top of his neck. Her failing vision softened away the lines of age and stress and left him a pleasant enough-looking but unremarkable man. She remembered all the times she generated excuses to spend time in his company. It hardly seemed plausible that he was the same person. She steeled herself and crossed the room.
Captain Holden, can I have a moment?
I'm really busy right now. Is this something that can wait?
It isn't, she said.
Holden grimaced, the expression there and gone again almost too quickly to register.
All right, how can I help you?
Elvie licked her lips, thinking about how to present the explanation. She didn't have any idea how much background he had in biology, so she figured it was better to start low.
Captain, you are a very special, very important person.
Wait. No, I... Really, wait, look. Dr. Okoye, Elvie, I've been feeling a kind of tension between us for a while now, and I've just been pretending not to, ignoring it. And that was probably a bad call on my part. I was just trying to make it all go away so we wouldn't have to say anything, but I'm in a very committed, very serious relationship, and while some of my parents weren't monogamists, this relationship is. Before we go any farther, I need to be clear with you that nothing like that can happen between us. It's not you. You're a beautiful, intelligent woman and...
The organism that's blinding us, she said. You're immune to it. I need to get blood samples. Maybe tissue.
I'll help any way I can, but you have to understand that
that's why you're special. You're immune. That's what I was talking about.
Holden stopped, his mouth half open, his hands out before him, patting the air reassuringly. For 3 interminable heartbeats, he was silent, and then,
Oh.
I thought you were the eye assessment that Dr. Merton did,
because I thought, well, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
There was. The tension you were talking about?
There was some tension.
But there's not anymore, Elvie said. At all.
Okay. Holden said. He looked at her for a moment. His head turned a degree to the side.
Well, this is awkward.
It is now.
How about we never mention this again?
I think that would be fine, Elvie said. We will need you to come let us take some blood samples.
Of course, yes, I'll do that.
And as my vision starts failing, I may need you to come read some of the results to me.
I will do that too.
Thank you.
And thank you, Dr. Okoye.
They each nodded to the other 2 or 3 times, apparently unable to break free of the moment. In the end, she spun on her heel and headed back, navigating between the knots and clusters of people camped on the floor of the ruins. One of the squatters was weeping and shaking back and forth. Elvie stepped past him and trotted back to the lab. Emma had arrived in her absence, sitting cross-legged on the floor with Lucia as they compared data. Elvie didn't think her eyes were getting markedly worse until she tried to look over their shoulders. Emma's hand terminal was a blur of white and blue, as empty of usable information as the clouds.
Did he agree?
Emma asked, her voice tense as a stretched wire.
He did? Elby said, sitting down at the chemistry deck. The water bag needed to be refilled. A time was going to come, and soon, when the little deck was going to have to stop generating drinking water, so that she could use its full resources to run her tests. It wasn't yet. She swapped out the water bags. Did you get a history? Lucia asked. A medical history? No. I was thinking perhaps you could do that. If you'd like, Lucia said, levering herself up from the ground. He's back in the main room? He is, Elvie said, kneeling at the deck controls. A smear of mud darkened the readout, but when she wiped it away, she could still make out the letters. I'll set up a few screenings for his blood. Lacrimal fluid, too? Probably a good idea, Elvie said. Just see if there's anything out of the ordinary. All right, then, Lucia said. When she walked toward the door, her steps had a little hitch in them, a hesitation. Elvie wondered how much longer the doctor would be able to function. The same question for all of them. There wasn't time. Anything new in your data? She asked. Consistent, Emma said. Whatever it is, it doesn't draw a distinction between us and the squatters. Well, it's the only one. The hours passed without Elvie being aware of it. Her mind and attention had taken her outside the world of minutes and hours to a place defined by test runs, transmission lag, and slowed only by her failing sight. Even before Holden's test results came back, she was prying what information she could from the samples of the organism, categorizing it only to find analogies with other plants or animals or fungi. The sense of time running short was a constant. And so, like a noxious smell over an extended period, before long it stopped being something she noticed. And instead, she felt the simple joy of doing what she did best. They had chosen her for the assignment because biological systems made sense to her. Working through knotty problems was what she did for fun. For months now, she had been doing a long run of data collection. It had been lovely to see this new world, to watch its first secrets unfold. But it had also been easy. A graduate assistant could have gathered all the same samples she had. This work was hard, and it was her. And while the life or death of everyone on New Terra resting on it scared her, it didn't take away the essential joy of her work. You need to eat, Fias said.
I just did, she said.
You gave me that bar.
That was 10 hours ago, he said gently. You need to eat.
Elvie sighed and leaned back from the screen. She'd been bent almost double trying to make out the results. Her back ached and there was a headache building all across the front of her skull. Fias held something out, another bar of emergency cake. When she took it, his fingers stayed with hers. Are you all right?
I'm fine, Elvie said.
You sure?
Well, apart from the obvious, why?
You seemed a little distant.
I've been working.
Sure, of course. I'm sorry, I'm just being stupid.
I don't understand, Elvie said. Haven't I been acting the same way I always do?
Yes, you have, Fias said, letting go of her hand. That was kind of my point. After, you know.
The sex?
He shifted. She imagined him closing his eyes, wincing a little bit. With her eyes, as bad as they were, it wasn't much more than a guess, but it filled her with a surprising glee. Who would have guessed? Fias, with tender feelings. The sex, he said. I just wanted to make sure that we were okay, that things were all right between us.
Well, she said, orgasm does release a lot of oxytocin, so I'm probably more fond of you than before.
Now you're teasing me.
That too, she said,
and took another bite of the cake. It really was awful stuff. I wanted to make sure that I knew where we stood. I haven't really thought about it, Elvie said, gesturing at the chemistry deck. You know, busy.
Of course, Fayez said. I understand.
Once we're not all going to die, though, maybe we could talk about it? Would that be okay?